behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome to Car Stuff. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Ben Bolin.
And I'm Scott Benjamin.
Hey, Scott. How's it going?
Not too shabby, Ben. Not too shabby.
Good to see you here. It's always a pleasure. It's way better than that one time I tried to do the show by myself.
The never-aired episode.
The never-aired, tremendously avant-garde episode of Car Stuff.
Ben and his puppet.
You know what? I was really attached to that puppet, and I don't appreciate you making light of
it. Well, the thing is, it just doesn't work on an audio podcast. You know, video, maybe.
Right.
Know, sock puppet theater.
Well, you know, it was kind of like a production car. It didn't make it. Or a concept car. It didn't make it to production. I'm glad we tried. But we're going to talk about something today that might be familiar to some of our fans, and we're continuing our three-wheel car theme.
Yeah, very good. We've got one that I love this car, Ben.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna right up front. I'm a huge fan of this car, and if there was any way that I could afford this as a toy, it would be in my garage.
I see what you're saying, because I was going to say that while I am also a big fan of this vehicle, there's no way that I am going to buy one in the foreseeable future.
No, it's a little bit pricey, and you know, we'll talk about cost about this one, and the there's another version too. But we're talking about the ACE Cycle Car.
Yeah, the American Cycle Car Endeavor. That's what ACE stands for. ACE. Yeah.
And it's built by a company called Liberty Motors.
Mm-hmm.
And you may remember Liberty Motors from something else. I mean, they also build sidecars. They've done that for, I think it's 23 years now at this point.
Yeah, I think we mentioned them in our sidecar episode.
I'm sure that we did, because they've created sidecars for movies.
Mm-hmm.
They're really kind of like an old style design. Like if you see a new sidecar that has an old look to it,
a
real classic look. And I think they also do some modern versions as well. But Liberty Motors, they've created, or Liberty Sidecars, rather.
Mm.
They're builders and creators of sidecars. They've been doing it, again, like 23 years, so a long time. This guy named Pete Larson, who's the owner and builder, has started up this little side company, I guess. I don't know if it's fair to call it that, you know, side company, because this is a big deal. But Liberty Motors creates this cycle car that looks an awful lot like the original three-wheel Morgans.
Ah, yes. Oh, we should also put in that Liberty Motors is officially Seattle's only car maker. This is here in Seattle, Washington, United States. And the Morgan that we're talking about is a very old design.
Yeah, that's right. This one comes – the beginning of the company, really.
Yeah.
We're talking about the Morgan Motor Company, and they're still around. You know, they create some beautiful – beautiful cars.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for a long time, and I don't even know, maybe still they are, but they used to use ash wood frames, I believe.
Yeah.
For the car. I mean, it was a wooden frame car.
I mean, we're talking coach building at this point. It's so far back that it's custom coach building.
Started in 1910, and I'll give you just a tiny little bit of history on Morgan, because I feel like we've covered Morgan in the past on other three-wheel car episodes. I know.
Yes. Yep.
Done in detail, but The founder is Harry Morgan, and back in 1910, you know, there was the whole thing with the taxes on four-wheel vehicles being extremely expensive,
right.
Road taxes, things like that. And he decided his idea was that he was going to make a three-wheeler that would officially be titled as or licensed as a motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea, he just called it a cycle car. It was kind of a, you know, conglomerate of the two names, easy enough. But it became extremely successful. In fact, that's the car that really launched the company.
Yeah, it became their flagship vehicle.
Yeah, they built it from around 1910, when it looked like, you know, the boxy carriage-type design, really,
mm-hmm.
with three wheels.
Yeah.
And bicycle tires, really. Up until, they built it all the way until 1953, Ben. They built a production version of this three-wheel vehicle that was really, became like the iconic, the flagship car of their company, really.
Mm-hmm.
In that, you know, that's what you think of when you think of Morgan, the early days of Morgan anyways. That exposed motor out on front.
Yep.
The two seats. Some of them, I think, had four seats.
They did have a four-seat model.
But the cycle car, now the idea that, the one that we're talking about, the ACE cycle car, that kind of, it mimics, but it's not, they also want to make sure that they're, they're careful to say this. It's not a faithful reproduction of the Morgan car. It's something new. It looks a lot like it. Similar.
Yeah, but shares DNA, I think, is the PR way to say it.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to put it. It shares DNA with the Morgans of, like, the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at that era of Morgan manufacturing the three-wheel vehicles, the Ace Cycle car looks a lot like the 1930s era Morgan vehicles.
Yeah, it's got more of a tubular design.
And just so that we also get this out there is that, Liberty Motors has been building these cars under license from the Morgan Motor Company.
Ooh, good call, Scott. Yes, they are legally doing this. They did get the license from Morgan. And we have a little bit of confusion that can crop up sometimes.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you said it because, there's a this is terribly confusing, really, to me.
It sure is.
Now, I kind of scratched my head over this one when we're talking about it because if you look up three-wheel car or Morgans or anything like that, you're going to find out that the Morgan Motor Company now builds a new three-wheel vehicle that, oddly enough, is based on the cycle car that Liberty Motors is making, which is licensed from Morgan Motor Company.
So they bought the if we think of, now this may be crass, but if we think of the Ace Cycle car as sort of a modern remix of the 30s Morgan, then what Morgan did was say, wow, we like this remix so much that we're going to buy it back.
Yes.
We're going to buy a license. So they're making two different Morgan-descended three-wheel vehicles.
Yeah, that's right. The Ace Cycle car and the Morgan three-wheeler, the modern version of the Morgan three-wheeler,
right,
are different vehicles. Not terribly different.
They have a lot in common, but I think it's safe to say that the Morgan three-wheeler is more of a quote-unquote faithful reproduction.
Yeah, from the factory itself. And I think a lot of people will be swayed to go to the Morgan Motor Company to buy one of those versus if they're looking for something like that, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm jumping ahead here, but just for the historic aspect of it, to say that this is a Morgan or it's an Ace Cycle car, it may come down to just availability for a lot of people, which one they choose, because they're very, very similar cars. Now, cost is a little bit different. I guess we should just get the cost out of the way, and then we'll describe the vehicle.
Right.
You want to do that?
Yeah, let's get the cost out of the way.
So I've done a little bit of conversion on the the Morgan Motor Company vehicle, and of course let's just tell them the Ace Cycle car first, the U.S. version.
The Ace Cycle car, which is the U.S. version by Liberty Motors, is going to run you $48,000 and up.
$48,000.
So $48,000 is the entry level, you guys.
Okay. So, and there's add-ons to that. I mean, if you want, leather wrapped steering wheel, I don't know what exactly comes with it. I don't have a list.
We'll get into it.
Okay. All right. But, there's additional things you can purchase on top of that.
There's a lot of customization.
Up the price. Yeah, sure. And of course, motor variants, we'll talk about motor as well. Mm-hmm. If you want to get the base version of the Morgan from the Morgan Motor Company. I'm getting tongue-tied here, Ben. The base price is £25,950. Now, I did the conversion. As of yesterday, the pound to one U.S. dollar here. The one British pound was $1.53 U.S. So, based on that conversion, $25,950 becomes $39,745.81 U.S. dollars.
Still like 10 grand less.
That's 10 grand less to go to the Morgan Motor Company in the U.K. and purchase this. However, there's a lot of add-ons that you can do, of course, like we mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some non-European vehicle surcharges that that come into play, like £1,500, of taxes. But if you're in the U.K., you're subject to a VAT tax, which you're not subject to here. If you buy it in North America,
which may be unfamiliar to some people in the United States or outside of Europe, the VAT tax, the VAT, is a value added tax.
Yeah, and that's a standard 20% tax, Ben. So now, because it's a non-essential item, now I know that has gradients. There's like a 20%, 5%, and then a 0% for essential goods and services.
So if we add all of that up,
it becomes the 20% VAT tax on that adds $8,000. So significant. I mean, it's big, the taxes and shipping charges from over there, add up. So when I said, somebody may want to go to Morgan just for the heritage of having the, you know, the Morgan name on their
right,
vehicle,
yeah,
whatever.
That's a cool thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the A cycle car is really where Morgan got the idea again to build this three wheeler vehicle.
Yeah, and this is such a strange thing. Now, we mentioned, we name dropped Pete Larson, the owner of Liberty Motors earlier, right?
Yeah, that's
at the
right.
beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And, what's cool about Pete Larson is that in addition to being a motoring enthusiast, he is also a designer.
Mm-hmm.
So, this reminds me, whenever we hear about somebody who is, involved in the design of a vehicle and so sold on the design of a certain vehicle that they commit to making them.
Yeah.
I always take them, more seriously. Not to say I'm dismissive of other people, but they get a lot of street cred with me, if they're an engineer and they know design.
You know, Ben, if you go to their website, the Ace Cycle Car website.
Yeah.
And check out some of the photos that they have there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the photos of the manufacturing process where they're building these things, and they've got all the frames laid out. They've got all the engines laid out in front of you. You know, several in a row because they're building for customers or, you know, just for demo vehicles, whatever. Very impressive. And you can see the attention to detail that, that Pete has with this product. I mean, you can tell that he puts a lot of his heart and soul into each and mm-hmm. every single one of them. They're all hand built. They're all individual, individually tailored, I guess is maybe the best way to say this. Because when you buy one of these things, you contact Pete. You contact Mr. Larson.
Yeah, you actually talk to the owner.
Yeah, you talk to him. And you kind of go through a checklist of what you want this thing to have mm-hmm. and to be like, you know, in the final product. And I'm sure that there's a lot of back and forth between the two of you and like what works, what doesn't work. But, you know, you customize your own vehicle. Each one is, well, as they put it, it's like an individual work of art, really.
Mm-hmm.
Each single one is unique and different.
I think the quotation I read was, each ace will be the unique result of a collaboration between Pete and the individual buyer.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. I didn't write that. I read that.
But anyways, the final goal uh-huh. is that it should, the owner's personality should be reflected in the vehicle that they receive. Because it's 100%, you know, what they want on the thing is what goes there. I mean, the colors, the paint scheme, the way mm-hmm. the interior is laid out. Anything. I mean, the color of the wheels, the way the wheels design, you know, if it's a spoke wheel, whatever it happens to be.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much cool about this thing. I love looking at photos of it, first of all. And the way they describe it, Ben, I mean, this is maybe the best description that I've heard of this thing. It's a blend of classic speedboat, open cockpit plane, and vintage race car.
Ah, yes, vintage race car.
How could you not love a car that is described like that? I mean, $48,000 is a steep entry price.
Sure.
But, classic speedboat, open cockpit plane, and vintage race car mm-hmm. in one vehicle?
Yeah. Let's delve into some of the stats here.
Oh,
right?
Great.
Okay, so we mentioned it's $48,000 entry level. What do you get for that? Well, that means you're probably going to get the 88-inch twin cam B motor.
Nice.
The other variant, we mentioned those, that you can get mm-hmm. would be the 103 twin cam.
Even nicer.
And that's the Harley-Davidson V-twin.
So, get this. Sounds like a Harley-Davidson, right? This car sounds like a Harley-Davidson. It's got this open cockpit design.
Mm-hmm.
Again, feels like a classic speedboat in the way it looks. You know, it has that sleek look.
Yeah, it's low and murderous.
You've really got to take a look at photos of this thing to get a feel for what this thing looks like. It's a beautiful design. To me, it is, anyways. I really enjoy it.
And, you know, we'll put a link the day that this podcast goes on air. We'll put a link in our Facebook page or on our Twitter so that people can check it out, too.
Sure. Yeah, that'll make it easy.
And one thing that I think we should mention when we talk about how it sounds like a Harley
mm-hmm.
is one of the only flaws that I found, like, I don't want to call it a flaw, but people have one problem with this vehicle that you hear about whenever you read a review.
Okay.
And that is that it has a lot of vibrations. That it has...
okay, I say, so what?
Yeah, just so everybody knows, Scott did the epitome of the so what gesture.
Yeah, hands up, shoulders shrugged. Yeah, it's honestly, with this type of vehicle, I would want that type of feel. I want maximum road feel in a vehicle like this. And that's why, you know, they don't have a windshield on the thing. They've got those little they've got those little Brooklyn's windscreens, you know, for the driver and passenger. Cause it is a two seater, you know, it's side by side seating. So you can take a passenger with you. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's any cargo area. There might be a small cargo area in the back. I know it's front wheel or front engine, obviously, you know, cause that's exposed out in front, which is, by the way, I love that setup. You know, throwback again from the Morgan. Mm. But it's a rear-wheel drive vehicle. It's a shaft-driven rear-wheel drive.
Exactly.
So there's not a whole lot of room for cargo and things like that. You know, I mean, just maybe what's in the boat tail back end, I guess, maybe.
It's got and it only weighs 950 pounds, but with that 103 engine, it can top 120 miles per hour.
Oh, I totally believe that, and I bet it gets there fast, too.
Yeah, that's what blew my mind, because I did not anticipate that when I first read, oh, it's got a Harley motor, and it's in a car.
But it's a big two-cylinder Harley-Davidson motor that's, I mean, it's 103 cubic inches, right? That's a pretty strong motor. Now, on a motorcycle, it's ridiculously fast. It's fast. In this, it's a slightly heavier vehicle probably than most motorcycles. I know some of those giant ones weigh about this much. But for 950 pounds for that engine to push that or pull that kind of weight, that's really not a whole lot, it's not a whole lot of weight. I mean, I bet it goes, I bet it's a super fast off the line acceleration type vehicle, just like a motorcycle.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, Pete Larson is not the first person who considered putting a V-twin engine with a three-wheeled car. There's a guy named Eric Buell. He was working with, Mighty Milwaukee motorcycle manufacturer. He visited a fellow named Tony Divey at Triking in Norfolk, and he wanted to see if they could put a Harley engine in Triking's chassis.
Okay, so this is Eric Buell of Buell Motorcycles.
Right.
Obviously got a lot of street cred. I don't know when he was thinking about doing this, but again, it's a great idea. I think it's a good idea. It's a good design.
And I don't know if I would buy one, though, but it's only because of the price tag. Anyway, the story with this whole Eric Buell thing, the reason I'm telling you about this is I read a really interesting article that shows that Larson drew some of his inspiration from this Triking project. And that he also felt like he had some lessons learned, including the Corbin Merlin.
Corbin. We're talking about Corbin again.
The it's described in this article as the ill-starred Corbin Merlin, which flared briefly before the project collapsed and left investors and depositors wondering where their money went.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Another three-wheel car bites the dust, right?
Yeah. Now, Larson, who works with his wife, Patty and Pete, they don't have backers. They used owner's deposits, proceeds from their motorcycle sidecar business, they have restored this workshop, and that workshop has been in his family since 1925.
By the way, if that's the workshop that's in the photos on their website, which I'm pretty sure it is.
I think you're right.
That's a gorgeous workplace. That's a really neat facility and a neat location for them to work out of to build this type of vehicle. It looks like a historic workshop, really. And, you know, I feel like I got to mention this now. You can go on the website to, and I don't mean to cut you off, man, but
no, please.
There's a newsletter that you can subscribe to on their site, but it hasn't been updated in a while. And I don't know if that has to do with, you know, his work with Morgan has taken over time or what. Mm-hmm. And you know how newsletters go. I mean, sometimes they, you know, it's when they get around to it, right?
Right. Yeah.
But
it's when there's time.
This one's been idle for a while. Now, I know that, I think it was like 2007 when the prototype was being driven around. This is when Mr. Larson and his wife were, you know, kind of still fooling around with the idea and trying different things and, you know, driving around, trying to get interest drummed up at different shows. Well, they've got three vehicles that they tour around with to different, you know, like local venues, I guess. Maybe Washington auto shows, you know, not auto show, the auto show.
Like regional events.
Yeah, I mean like, you know, the car lot, car shows, that type of thing. But the latest news to come from them was from April of 2010. So this has been, again,
three years now.
They mentioned, you know, a couple of shows that they had gone to, and that they also had some new buyers, some worldwide buyers, which is kind of interesting.
Neat.
They mentioned Saudi Arabia, they mentioned England, Luxembourg, and then a new order that came in from Norway, and they also mentioned that they had seven new cars completed, six additional chassis built, which two of which were already sold. So it seems like, you know, that they've got quite a bit of business that they're drumming up. Maybe they're just so busy building cars that they're unable to update this. But, you know, the site's still up there. You can still contact them. I think there's a lot to learn just from talking to this guy. Maybe we should give him a call and find out what he's got to say about this thing.
I would love that, because I got to tell you, you know, listeners to the of this show know that you and I have a heck of a soft spot for any time we see an independent car maker coming up, because a lot of times, just the way that the market has evolved, it's going to be uphill. And so I have immense respect for people who can do this, especially the someone who's grown up around this business and this industry, who struck out on their own and made, like, let's be honest, Scott, even though I can't really afford this car, I think it's a beautiful piece of machinery.
Oh, it's absolutely gorgeous.
And I would love to have one, but I would settle for riding around in someone else's for a while.
Yeah. I'd like to, you know what, Ben? I have never driven, or even sat in, I don't think, a three-wheel vehicle. I was thinking about this the other day. There's a bunch of them out there. I mean, there's new versions of these things. I mean, there's the T-Rex that we've mentioned a few times, the Corbin Sparrow, which that's a tough one to find. Aptera didn't really get too much past the prototype stage. There's a lot of, like, microcars, old microcars that have three-wheel design.
Mm-hmm.
There's all these Morgans out there. And there were a ton of others. I mean, there were some of the more dangerous, I guess, the Delta design ones with the front wheel, you know, single front wheel.
Right.
Wasn't there a Top Gear episode where drives one and just continually tips over, rolls over?
Yeah. Are you talking about the three-wheel or the microcar?
No, it's three. Well, it's both.
Okay.
I can't remember which one it is. Anyways, hilarious show.
Yeah.
Man, there's so much so many out there. I just can't believe that I haven't somehow come across one in a used car lot and talked somebody into letting me drive one yet.
Yeah, which is weird, because you're a pretty persuasive guy when you want to be.
Yeah, I guess so.
So let's go ahead and make that a resolution. What do you think, man?
That's not a bad idea.
Let's try to find a three-wheel car.
Not a bad idea. And you know what? I have another resolution, too.
What's that?
To read more books, or rather listen to more books, maybe.
You're blowing my mind.
Yeah, I mean, we've got not a whole lot of time to sit down and read, but we do spend a lot of time commuting.
Yep.
And both of us do.
That's true.
And I think something that we've both found very advantageous is being able to download audiobooks, right?
Heck yeah, man. I love an audiobook because you can't always take a book with you in a lot of places.
Yeah, and we found that Audible.com has a huge selection of audiobooks or downloads possible for us. And I found another interesting one that I think our listeners are going to really key into here. Now, I usually do this. I set this up with, like, stick with me, right?
Because
there's something here that I'll tell you, Ben. As I started to write down notes for these, you know, like what I like about it, what I don't like.
Right.
I almost decided midway through listening to the sample for this one that I wasn't going to use it, because it just kind of wasn't really sparking any interest in me.
Wow, okay.
I know the little audio sample that I got, because I haven't listened to the whole thing.
Yeah.
Initially, it didn't grab me, and I don't know why it didn't, but as I was listening and still writing, you know, and I'm thinking, like, well, maybe I'll just get rid of this. At the end, something really extraordinary came up, and I think that this thing is going to be full of little tidbits like this that are going to make this thing more than worth the download, I'll tell you.
What is it?
The book is titled Tales from the Indianapolis 500, A Collection of the Greatest Indy 500 Stories Ever Told. Now, all right, this isn't just some outside narrators coming into this. It's a book that's adapted for audio by Jack Arute, who's a television announcer, Jenna Fryer, and the foreword is by A.J. Foyt. And it's interesting listen, I guess. I guess you can't say read. But, you know, it starts out, I'll tell you, the sample starts out a little dry.
Okay.
But this thing that blew my mind in this one, I think this is going to be loaded with these. You know, the greatest stories ever told. This is like a passed down thing. Something that maybe other listeners know about. I didn't. A little secret is that in 1969, Mario Andretti was, that was the year that he famously won the Indy 500, the right. only time he ever won. And there's an Andretti curse at the Indy 500, mm-hmm. Where Andretti's just simply do horrible there every year. There's always something that takes him out.
We should do a podcast on that.
We really should do something about that, definitely. But I didn't know this, that in the year 1969, Mario Andretti, he was in the front row qualifying, right? Mm-hmm. So he's in, you know, I think it was the middle of the front row. And, you know, of course, there are press photos that go along with that. Earlier in the week, he had crashed his Formula One car, his Lotus car, so badly that his face was burned what he called horribly.
Oh, wow.
Earlier in the week, and he was a little bit too embarrassed to go out in front of the press and take these photos because you have to stand, you know, sit in the car and
right,
do the press
yeah.
photos. He sends out his identical brother, Aldo, as a stand-in, but didn't tell anybody.
A body double
for Mario Andretti during all these, you know, all the press photos from 1969. So, I mean, it's just
so
like
that guy
little,
in all those photos isn't even Mario
no,
Andretti.
But you'll see in every press photo from 1969 with the, you know, the front row of people who were there, uh-huh. you know, standing in the cars, and it's,
yeah.
by the way, gorgeous Indianapolis 500 cars in 1969. They're
like year.
That tube design. They're beautiful mm-hmm. cars. That's Aldo Andretti as a body stand-in for Mario.
I had no idea.
I didn't either. And, you know, that's the thing that just it kind of perked up my ears and was like, well, you know what? I'm going to download this one. Okay, Ben.
Yes.
Back to our topic of interest today.
Yes, yes.
The Ace Cycle car. Now, is there any more that we need to know about the Ace Cycle car? Because I've got a little, maybe one more thing that I want to add in that you may find interesting. I don't know. Maybe not.
Oh, I was wrapped up. Yeah, let's. Right. I want to hear the one more thing.
All right. This is a sort of it's a one more thing stuff Scott sees. How about that? A
combo. You're doubling down.
It's a combo
I love it.
Deal.
Yeah.
Do you remember not long ago, if you're a Facebook follower or if you read our blog, I hope you do read our blog, I posted a photo of a car that I saw that was a really unusual find. Remember that
yeah.
It was the Jaguar, the XJ220?
Can't believe you spotted it in the wild.
I also can't. Now, the very next morning on my way to work, mm-hmm. the very next morning, I'm in traffic, heavy traffic in downtown Roswell, and there's no way I can really get out of where I am. I'm you know, firmly embedded in traffic at a light.
Yeah.
In between two cars in front of me, you know, a gap of 5 feet maybe, passing between a couple of cars, I saw a three-wheeler, and what I think was an Ace Cycle car. And
really?
Yeah, that's what kind of sparked my interest in this for today. But
that's weird.
I don't know. But now that we know that Morgan still builds these,
yeah,
I was thinking it's probably not a historic Morgan. Just odds are.
Who would take that morning traffic anyway?
Yeah, this is heavy, heavy morning traffic, like 8 a.m. in downtown historic Roswell. And I see this Morgan three-wheeler. It had an engine up front, I'll tell you that. And again, yeah. I saw this car for total of, and not in its entirety even, just as it passed between two cars.
Right.
I saw it for a total of maybe a tenth of a second. It was that quick. And there's
wow.
no way for me to even see it as it, you know, continued down the road because,
right.
you know, traffic around me. It's frustrating because, you know, I know that it's there. I know that it travels that way.
Yeah.
I've kind of been watching every morning, like around 8 o'clock. I try to get to the same intersection around 8 o'clock every morning on sunny days, mm-hmm. hoping that I'll see this thing again. And maybe I can, you know, follow, not in a stalking way, but, you know, find out where this guy goes to and maybe talk to him about it. Because I'd love to learn, you know, first of all, I want to know if it's an Ace Cycle car.
Or if it's a Morgan.
Or if it's a Morgan, or if it's a classic Morgan, mm-hmm. but I don't think it's classic. I think it's maybe one of the newer versions.
I mean, who would take that out into rush hour traffic?
That's first time I've ever seen one of these on the road, you know, driving. I've seen them at mm-hmm. auto shows, you know, at
yeah.
Concourse events or whatever. But I don't know. I thought it was an interesting find, and for it to happen, I mean, it was literally like 12 hours from when I saw the previous one.
That's
no,
so weird.
You know what? More like 20 hours.
That's kind of serendipity. It might also be there's this thing called Bader-Meinhof syndrome, where if you first hear of something that comes up, you know, like maybe you think of a song on the radio, and mm-hmm. then you feel like you hear it three times mm-hmm. in the next few days, then our brains sort of try to find a pattern there, and it makes it look like there's synchronicity, or maybe maybe this could be your ticket to get a ride in a three-wheel car.
You know, I hadn't thought of that, but maybe it is. Maybe whoever owns this thing will be kind enough to let me sit the passenger seat for, you know, spin around the block or something.
People who usually people who have wonderful cars, at least in the situations I've met them, have always been very, you know, appreciative of, like, if they can tell that you admire the vehicle, that you know your stuff, and if you're not being creepy, then most of the people that I've met, and these are just complete strangers, Scott, are incredibly welcoming, and they're like, oh yeah, hey, come look at this, because they're just so excited that someone else cares.
Ben, you know, I've been at gas stations before filling up. You know, I've had a lot of unusual cars in my past.
That's
right?
True.
Some strange ones, you know, some unique things. And at gas stations, I can remember times when I've spent half an hour at a gas station talking to somebody who happened to be filling up next to me that, you know, got into a conversation about the car that I'm driving or vice versa, you know, talking to them about their car. And it just happens that way. So hopefully, you know, maybe this will turn into my three-wheeler ride. Who knows?
I love that we can have those conversations with people, and I'm all about it. You know, I don't, the car that I drive, I've been driving these for a long time, but whenever I see somebody else in a Monte Carlo, I instantly feel like we're in, you know, like we're on the same team.
There's a bond.
On this mission in the interstate. Yeah. But, while we're planning to figure out our new resolution to get into three-wheel cars, why don't we head to the sunset with a little bit of listener mail?
I'd love to do that.
Okay, it's been a little while since we've done this. We had a lot to catch up on, so I'm just going to read some quickly and then maybe get some quick responses. All right, so Mike writes to us from the internet, and Mike says, many city police departments have no pursuit laws, yet they still drive the most inefficient vehicles. Why is that? I guarantee I can get through town faster in my old worn-out Honda Accord than they can in their Chargers and Tahoes. Not to mention mine is more reliable and roomier inside. Makes no sense to me why they would choose to buy vehicles that get 15 miles per gallon compared to 30. By the way, mine has 250,000 miles on it, is still running strong, so durability's not an answer. Love the show, guys. Maybe this would make a good podcast discussion. Maybe take a look at what other countries are using for squad cars and what their pursuit laws are.
Mike, not a bad idea. There's a few things. I mean, man, so much comes into my head when we're talking about
this.
Yeah,
that's a lot of big stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot there. Boy, how can you describe why police can't really use a Honda, what do you say, a Honda Accord?
Yeah, he's got a Honda Accord.
With 250,000 miles as a police cruiser. There's so much gear they have to carry.
Yeah,
and those things are so durable. I mean, they have to be able to pit maneuver vehicles that are much larger. They need the weight behind them to do something
that's
like that.
That's part of it, yeah.
Man, there's just, and not only that, you know, they're in use 24 hours a day.
Right.
They have to be extremely comfortable to be in, because otherwise you're going to have people that, you know, they're going to be, well, just uncomfortable during their 8-hour shift or 10-hour shift or whatever it is, maybe even more.
Mm-hmm.
Man, there's so much, Ben.
We could talk about this later.
I think we could. I know we've done police car episodes in the past, like, you know, unusual equipment that they carry, things like that. But this is a good one. So, Mike, you've opened our eyes to, you know, maybe a new topic. That's good.
Yeah, and Mike, please do not attempt to race or otherwise antagonize the law enforcement.
Or evade. Don't try to evade.
Yeah, not worth it, but that is an excellent letter. Next one, let's just make this the last one. Alex writes to us, who also signed his name Ziggy Mansod. So I'm just going to read that in case that is your nickname, Alex. Hey guys, love the show, love the podcast. After months of pondering of an idea for a listener suggestion, I've got one. I recently picked up an 85 CJ7. I was thinking about gear ratios, whether it be in the axles or in the transmission and the difference between them. Thanks and keep up the great work. We've never done anything on gear ratios.
No, we haven't. I mean, I know we've done four-wheel drive podcasts and things like that.
Yep.
You know, off-roading, a lot of off-roading
transmission
vehicles.
Transmission stuff, yep.
Sure we have. Not a bad idea.
Not a bad idea. Alex, Mike, thank you so much for writing to us and giving us a lot to think about. There are a couple of other listener mails I think I'm going to save for our next episode so we can get out of here. And, Scott, it sounds like you're going to – okay, let's game plan. So it sounds like you're going to get an Ace Cycle car, and I'm going to go after Elio Motors vehicle, which is more in my price range.
If I can somehow convince my wife to write a check out of our retirement for $50,000, yeah, then maybe. But I don't think that's going to happen. So,
Well, we'll see.
Barring any windfall, recent, you know, upcoming, you know, huge windfall, Not anytime soon.
Okay, well, on that note, we're off to seek our adventures and possibly windfalls. Guys, we hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we loved recording it. Please write to us and let us know what you think. You can give us upcoming suggestions for topics and all kinds of places on the internet, right, Scott?
We've got Twitter, we've got Facebook, we've got the blog.
We've even got an email address. It is
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.